Today we are honored to host Suzette Bravo, a resilient woman who's weathered the harshest of storms yet remains standing strong. Suzette's journey from the depths of childhood trauma and self-destruction to the highs of self-realization, love, tragic loss, has given her profound insights into the power of confronting and accepting one's past. Suzette bravely turned her life around, proving that no matter the trials, we possess the power to redefine our own narrative. In her brave journey of acceptance, forgiveness, and self-love, she has not only transformed her own life, but is also passionate about empowering others to face their own stories. Get ready for an inspiring conversation about resilience, bravery, and personal transformation with Suzette Bravo.
All right, Suzette, we're so happy to have you on the show. And, you know, it's nice to finally put a face behind the model that Dr. Spencer was using on his Fit for 50s. We'll get into that later. And by the way, you did a fabulous job.
Thank you.
From a man who had, let's just kick this off, from a man who had an amazing mother, I have an amazing wife. I have two incredible sisters. So there's nothing like a strong woman. And you have a saying, become the woman you needed as a girl. And I love that saying, by the way. And where did this statement come from and what does it mean to you?
You know, growing up, I experienced a lot of trauma. And I was fortunate in my growing up that I had my aunt who was kind of, she was my rock. She was the one person that I knew I could go to when things got really, really bad. And she modeled a lot for me. And there's still a lot of things in my life that I recognize that I do because of the influence that she had on me when I was younger. And as I've been working with young girls through the work that I do, I sit on the board of directors for PACE Center for Girls, which is an alternative school and counseling center for, they call them at-risk girls, but I really don't like that term. I prefer at-promise girls. Ooh, wow. But I believe that having a role model, having somebody that you can look up to, having a mentor, and even just somebody who will hear you and see you when you're going through something is incredibly powerful. Because I think as humans, one of the most important things, regardless of where we are in our life, whether we're going through something hard, whether we're celebrating a success, whatever, having somebody who sees us and hears us and celebrates with us and holds us is so, so powerful. So to answer your question, becoming the woman that you needed as a girl is about becoming that woman who stands and champions for other women and for girls and will hold that flame and be the light for any, you know, anyone, men, women, children, it doesn't matter, but hold that light and be that beacon for somebody coming up behind you.
Suze, as you know, you are definitely one of my favorite people.
Aww.
And
me too.
And you know, when we have our conversations, they're often so inspiring. And I would love to, you know, understand, you know, what has shaped you in the realm of in the men that have been a part of your life, whether it be father, husband, boyfriend, you know, how did that allow you to navigate to where you're at today, the good and the bad?
Well, there's so many answers to that question. You know, my early interactions with men was not great. My parents divorced when I was two, and there's a whole bunch of backstory that I'm not going to get into, but I didn't lay eyes on my father until I was 17 years old. I've seen him one time in my life. Mm-hmm. And I'm not about placing blame or any of that because I don't really know the whole story, but I've seen him once. So there was that. My stepfather was a horrible man, horrible. He was abusive. In all the ways that you can be abusive, not just to me, but also to my sister. And I was very fortunate, though, growing up. My grandfather was and still is, I believe, the greatest man who's ever existed. I mean, he was just, there was something so deeply powerful and loving and amazing about him. He was a Marine. He fought 3 wars for this country, and he fought every day for his family. And I had that example of a man growing up, and I knew that that was what I wanted, that I was never going to settle for less than that. And I was very fortunate. You know, I had my share of really bad relationships. My first relationship in high school was with a guy who was also abusive. He was an alcoholic and he was abusive. And I'll never forget the day that I made the decision after ending that relationship that I was not going to continue that cycle, that never again, never again was I going to be disrespected. Never again was I going to tolerate that behavior. And I will say that I have held to that. Nice. And I've been very fortunate in my life with the men that I've walked with. And so I met my husband, Andrew, in 1998. And we were together for about 17 years. We got married. He has 2 of the most amazing children. Andy and Caroline are just phenomenal human beings. So I was happy. Things were good. And he was a lot like my grandfather. He kind of had that, he was all about how other people felt when they were around him. And he was amazing. And he passed away in 2013, very suddenly, from an aggressive stage 4 glioblastoma brain tumor. Mm. And when that happened, it was my entire foundation fell out from under me. Everything. I had spent a lot of my life kind of burying things that happened to me in my childhood, ignoring the trauma that happened and convincing myself that I was fine. And when I lost Andrew and my life kind of crumbled at that point, it took me a long time to come out of that darkness. And it was a series of bad decisions, bad behaviors. I mean, just the stories I could tell are just outrageous. But it was also the beginning of my healing. And it was the beginning of the deepest parts of my healing. And it's why I do what I do today. So in sort of a very roundabout way of answering your question is I've had interactions with bad, quote unquote, bad men who were lost and didn't know their way. And I've had experiences with men who are really wonderful. And I will say that I've never lost hope about men. You know, I think men get a bad rap in the world today. And I would just kind of like to challenge that belief. I think men, just like the rest of us, are human.
Suzette, let me ask you, though, what do you tell these young girls that have, like these PACE girls that you mentor and take and help, what do you tell them when they don't have good models in their life?
Well, you know, that can be challenging. It really can. And we learn so much from observing. So it's hard to, if you've never had that example in your life, it's kind of hard to imagine that it's there. But, you know, I think there's role models and there's mentors and there's people that we can look up to in all walks of life. And it's just a matter of where you look. I mean, they may not have that in their family, but they can look to leaders in the community. They can look to other family members. But, you know, I think it's really important to understand that we've all been through things and we all go through things. And we can always find what we're looking for.
Mm, that's great. You know, yeah. And that's so true. We can always, if we're looking for crap, we'll find it, you know? Yeah. So I totally agree with that. You know, I do have, you know, sometimes, and, you know, correct us if we're wrong, but women tend to bury their emotional trauma different than men. And
yes,
as they, a lot of time they're seen as caregivers and they're the ones everybody turns to for that nurturing stuff. And sometimes they need to be nurtured, but they're not given that chance. In your opinion, how does this affect them later on in life?
Women are nurturers, and I believe men are nurturers too. But women, there seems to be this societal thing that a woman has to sacrifice her entire self to serve others in order to be worthy. You're not a good mother if you take any time for yourself. I've had so many women tell me that they think that self-care is selfish. And it's not. I mean, nurturing and caring for others is really beautiful. But when you do it at the expense of your own joy, love, and happiness, and when you do it in an attempt to manipulate, it's a very different way to live. Like, you know, the kind of that martyr thing, like, oh, I do everything for everybody else. I don't need anything for myself. That's a little bit of an art of manipulation. And that's where I think we get lost.
I totally agree. I use this analogy that you hear in finances that you pay yourself first so you can have money to do others. Yet we as humans, men and women, don't seem to pay ourselves first, take care of ourselves first. So there's something left over to take care of other people. We give it all away first and there's nothing left in the bank for us. Is that analogy that you're kind of talking about?
Absolutely. The expression too, you can't pour from an empty cup. If we're chronically depleted and we're frustrated and we're tired and we're not operating on all cylinders, nobody's going to get the best of us. We're not going to get the best of us. Our family's not, our coworkers, we're not. And you can only, you know, it's just like if you have a pitcher of water, you keep pouring out. Eventually it's going to be empty. We're the same way. And part of a couple of the pillars that I coach on a lot are self-love and self-leadership, because I think it's really important to come from a space of loving yourself. When you love and honor yourself, you make different decisions in the world. You make different choices. And when you come from a space of self-leadership and knowing that the decisions and the way that your life goes and how you see your life is up to you, you make different decisions as well.
So we're challenged in this era with this masculine, feminine thing. And there's a lot of choices now to how you want to identify and be. And then, you know, and then there's Me Too. And then there's, you know, oppression of men. I want to ask you how you feel about this masculine versus feminine energy dynamic that's going on these days. Some good, some bad. Tell me about it.
You know, I'll be honest. My heart goes out for the men out there. It really does, because they're not the enemy. It's just like anything. Like, you have good men, you have bad men. And I'm not a fan of labels, but I'm very much simplifying that. But just like you have men with challenges, you have women with challenges. We all have challenges. We are all human beings. And I have had men hurt me. I have had women hurt me. It's, you cannot go around vilifying men because of how they are. And I could really go off on a rant about this because it makes me a little crazy. And Spencer, you know that because we've had this conversation. But and this is purely my belief. This is not anything that anybody else needs to subscribe to, but you asked me the question, so I'm going to be honest. I'm a huge fan of, I believe 1,000,000% in masculine feminine polarity. And as women, again, this goes down to like the self-sacrificing and the showing up for everybody else before you take anything for yourself. Women are expected to exist in masculine energy all the time. We're expected to go into the workforce and be strong and powerful and embody all of that. And there's nothing more powerful and more beautiful than feminine energy in its true essence. There's nothing more powerful than a woman fully in her feminine. There's a reason why they call it Mama Bear and not Papa Bear. You know, yes. I mean, have you ever seen a woman in protection of her family and her children? Oh, yeah. that is feminine energy in its essence. Feminine energy is nurturing and loving and giving, but it will also tear you up if you threaten what's important to her. What's important to her. And when women exist too much in their masculine, what ends up happening is a woman, especially a woman who's looking for a strong masculine partner, if she is in her masculine all the time, it makes it very challenging for her partner to show up in his masculine, because a man truly in his masculine is loving and protective and all of those things as well. And I am not saying that, you know, women need a man to protect them and all, like, we just need to take that off the table. I'm talking about masculine energy and feminine energy, and we need polarity in a good, strong relationship. And women have a responsibility to be open to that and to be trusting to that and to allow their partner to show up in their masculine. Because one of the dynamics I see a lot with the women that I work with is when they're very much in their masculine all the time, then they end up emasculating their partner and pushing their partner into their feminine energy. And then that throws the polarity off. And women are wondering why they don't find their partners sexy or attractive, or it's because they've been emasculated and they're afraid to show up in their true masculine.
So good. Woo-hoo, love that. So there's a lot of conversation going on. And I tend to experience this every once in a while. You especially when, you know, like Dr. Terry and I, we see patients continuously, and we may compliment them, like a female, you'll compliment them on how great they look today. Or, you know me, Suzette, I'll notice everything. Nice nails. Oh, I love your earrings. Yes. And then the response you get back is, oh yeah, I got, you know, I this is just junk. They may not even say thank you. You know, they just, right. they either shut down and you're left wondering, did I offend them? Or maybe I shouldn't compliment. They seem so uncomfortable. You know, can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, I think honestly, for some people, accepting a compliment doesn't feel safe in their bodies, because maybe somebody's hurt them in the past. Maybe they had a parent growing up who kind of gave underhanded compliments. A lot of the way that we show up in the world today is based on programming that we picked up as children. And, you know, again, and I've seen, you know, women get upset when men open the doors for them because they feel like the man thinks they can't do it for themselves. I disagree. I mean, I think anytime somebody goes out of their way to show kindness in whatever form that is, we all just need to learn to smile and say thank you. That's it. It's very simple. Somebody is showing you a kindness, say thank you. You don't have to judge it. There doesn't have to be a reason for it. There doesn't have to be an ulterior motive. Just thank you.
Thank you for that.
Very simple.
Yeah.
So important.
And I think the way we were raised, you know, you open the door for a woman, you open the, you know, you pull the chair out. It's not that they can't do it. It's a sign of respect. You know, you're respecting that person at the highest level you can possibly do at that moment. And I think that's what they're not getting, that they're being respected, not being, demoralized.
Yes. I remember I was probably a teenager, maybe a little older than that. So my grandparents were of that generation where, you know, every day at 4 or 5 o'clock, they would have a drink. I mean, that was just what they did every day. And I'll never forget we were upstairs in the kitchen with my grandmother. And I think some of the rest of the family was there. My grandfather was downstairs and he would shake his scotch glass and you would hear the ice and the scotch glass rattle. And my grandmother knew that he needed a drink. And I said to my grandmother, I said, are you just is that how he asked you to get him a drink? Are you just going to go down there and get him a scotch? And she looked at me dead in the face and she said, you're absolutely right. I'm going to. As much as he has done for this family, you're absolutely right. The least I can do is go get him a drink. And I was like, okay.
Wow.
But it totally reframed that perspective. My grandfather wasn't being disrespectful. It was either that or him yelling at her. Like, but my grandmother, they each had their lane. Like, he did the things that he did, and she showed up and did the things for him. And it was beautiful. I mean, they were married for almost 60, over 60 years when my grandfather passed away. So it worked.
Yeah. Wow. Let me guess. Scotch, Irish?
No, actually, you know what? And it's funny because so I quit drinking like 6.5 years ago, but scotch and bourbon were like my drink of choice. And it took me a long time to warm up to scotch because I'll be honest with you, my grandparents drank disgusting scotch. It was Johnny Walker and Jim Beam, not Jim Beam. Oh. What's the other
one?
The green one.
My dad drank Cutty Sark, and it was,
nasty. And the first time I ever tried a single malt scotch, I think it was Oban. I was like, oh my God, this is what this tastes like.
I had Oban this weekend. Yeah. My dad would come home with a Cutty Sark, and my mom would have like a Jim Beam Manhattan. I'm like, oh, that's terrible.
Nasty. So gross.
You brought back a great memory of my father. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
That is hilarious.
So I got a question. You know, people always looking for what their worth is, you know, their value, their validation. But it seems to be on the external side, you know, what kind of car I drive, what kind of suit I wear, what kind of house I live in, versus finding that validation from within. You know, where do you know, is that a society thing, or how does people that are broken, that are watching YouTube and TikTok and all that kind of stuff, turn off the noise and find that validation from within?
Oh, you just hit on one of my very favorite subjects. Yes, the world that we live in today is so challenging. We are bombarded every single day with everybody else's highlight reel of how amazing their life is. So we sit in our homes when we're feeling bad about ourselves and we're scrolling through social media, and we take in this belief that everybody else's life is rainbows and unicorns and we're miserable and we don't know why. And we continue to look externally for some sort of validation that we're worthy, that we are deserving, that we deserve a space on this planet. And it breaks my heart. It honestly breaks my heart, especially for girls growing up, because I mean, I remember growing up, it was hard. It was hard being a teenager, but you know, my circle of influence was maybe the 45 or 60 other people. My elementary school and junior high school are relatively small. But you know, if you did something stupid or you were embarrassed or people got in a fight or whatever, 2 days later, everybody was talking about something else. It just sort of went away. And nowadays, like any mistake that you make, anything that happens lives on the internet forever. And you're also comparing yourselves to people all over the world. You're comparing yourselves to people that are very different from you. And I tell people all the time, there are 8 billion people on this planet right now, which means that there are 8 billion different versions of reality running at any given time. And when we try to compare our normal average everyday life to somebody else's highlight reel, we're always going to fall short because, again, there's 8 billion people. There's always going to be people that are better looking than you, that have more money than you, that do things better than you. It is just always going to be a thing. You're never going to get away from that. And I was writing a piece this morning, and I was reminded of the quote by Viktor Frankl: between stimulus and response, there is a space, and it is in that space that we get to decide our reaction. Mm-hmm. And I know I just butchered that a little bit, but you get the point. Mm-hmm. We can look at all the stimulus going on around us, and we don't have any control over anything that's going on in the world. We don't. I mean, we all got very familiar with that concept in 2020 when the entire world flipped upside down in a matter of days. we have no control over the external world. The only thing we have control over is our internal world, the meaning that we assign to the things that are going on around us and how we react to the things that are going on around us. We do have control over that. And we just have to make the decision that internally, what we choose for our life is going to be where we put our attention and our focus.
What do you tell somebody, or you know, some of the younger folks, well, even older folks, how to cycle out of that habit of that scrolling through and looking at TikTok and being inspired or dispired by what you see? Is there a strategy you have that may break that dopamine reaction that everybody's thriving on?
Well, you just hit on the key word there. It's a habit. It's a habit. Oh. It's a habit that we get into. It's the go-to to make ourselves feel better. And anything that we do in our life, anything that we want to change, anything that we want to make different, all have one thing in common. And they all start with us making the choice and us choosing and making a decision. And that is where the personal responsibility comes in, because it's not just about that you get to choose and you get to decide what things mean to you. It is your sacred responsibility. And there's a lot that goes into that. A lot of us have trauma that drives the things that we do. A lot of us have beliefs and stories that have been programmed into us, sometimes from childhood, sometimes from relationships, but we pick things up. I mean, I was laughing with a friend of mine not too long ago. We were talking about trauma responses and how, you know, especially when you go through trauma as a child, you develop these survival tactics, you develop these habits and these protections. And they work great for you as a child when you're helpless in a situation. But as an adult in the adult world, dealing with other adults and no longer under threat, they don't always serve you. But we were laughing because I was like, yeah, I kind of remember the moment when I realized like the big part of my personality was just a series of trauma responses. So along with that decision to choose, we also have to acknowledge that sometimes that's going to take a little bit of work, and we have to be willing to open ourselves up and look at ourselves and get real honest about what we're doing and get curious about why we're doing it. And we have to be willing to look at ourselves with fierce compassion. First of all, we have to be willing to leave the judgment at the door. And we have to get very honest, very honest. Radical honesty is the most important thing.
All right. All right, Coach, I'm going to have you put your coach's hat on for a second. And
sure.
So you, in 2000, and just call it 20, people started looking at their phones because they had nothing else to do, or their computer, an extra 3-4 hours a day. And now this scroll that Dr. Spence was just talking about has become the new habit. Whether you used to be, you could shoot up, you could drink, you could smoke. Now the new dopamine response is the device. So it's easy to say, put the phone down or set a timer. That's easy. It's just like saying, put the pipe down. You know, it's easy to say that. What are the steps necessary that people have to do to actually break the habit? Because it's easy to talk, but what are some steps that people can do to get themselves out of this addictive hole?
Well, addiction takes many forms. And like you were saying, you can be addicted to alcohol. You can be addicted to drugs. You can be addicted to your phone. You can be addicted to shopping. You can be addicted to external validation. There's many things that we can be addicted to. And this isn't the conversation for getting into the whole science of dopamine and all the stuff behind that. But it all comes back to making the choice that you want something different. That is the first step, is deciding that you want to do something different. And when you decide that you want to do something different, then you can look at all of the other things. So, okay. So you've decided now, okay, this is a habit. I have a habit of spending 3 hours on my phone. I don't want to do this anymore. What am I going to do about this? So for a lot of people, I mean, in COVID, I get it. Like, everybody was bored. But now the world is opened back up. Everybody's getting back into their life. So a lot of it has become, and like we talked about a couple of minutes ago, it's become a habit. You know, you wake up every day making decisions based on what your life has been in the past. So your past life drives your present life, which is going to determine what your future is going to be. So the first thing is to decide that you want to do something different. So acknowledging that and then looking at what is the benefit that you're getting from that? What is the benefit that you're getting from sitting on your phone and doom scrolling? Because every behavior that we have, we get a benefit from it. We might not know what it is. And you might say, well, no, scrolling on my phone just makes me feel bad. No, you're getting something out of that. Either you're procrastinating or you're avoiding something. There's a reason why you're on your phone. And that's where getting curious and getting honest with yourself comes in. I'm a huge fan of personal responsibility. We can sit back and look at the world and blame the world for everything that's going on with us. We can blame the economy. We can blame our parents. We can blame the state of the world. We can blame whatever we want to blame. But when you blame and you look externally to solve your problems and to fix your life, you give up all your power. You take every bit of power that you have and you throw it out there and you're left sitting in the chair and you're a victim. And until everybody else changes, you're not going to change. Until the world changes, you're going to be unhappy. Until this person does this behavior, you're going to feel this way. But the truth of the matter is, and it goes back to what we said a few minutes ago, we have no control over the external world. We don't. We have no control over anything outside of us. The only thing that we have any control of in this world is how we react to things and the meaning that we give. And that you do have control over. So acknowledging that and owning that and knowing that whatever it is that you want, you can have. You just have to decide that you want it. And then you can start to take the steps to make it happen. That might be getting help. That might be therapy or hiring a coach or going to the gym or all the things that you need to do. It might involve looking at your childhood and figuring out where these stories came from. There's a million different hows, but the first thing you need to come up with is your why. And that comes into making that decision that you want something different. You don't even have to know what it is. You just have to know you want something different. It's a very small step. Once you make that decision, then you can put the rest of the pieces in place.
Brilliant. Perspective. Perspective is everything. You know,
perspective is very much everything. And the victim mentality is so pervasive in our society these days. Everything is somebody else's fault. And I can speak to that because I lived there for a long time. I had this story about the trauma in my childhood. I had this story about what it meant when I lost my husband. I had all of these stories. And I realized that I was spending so much time fighting for my limitations. All the reasons why I couldn't, all the things that were in my way. And what I realized one day is none of it was true. It was what I decided to make of it. And yes, all of those things are part of the fabric of who I am today, but I get to decide what they mean. And I've decided that they don't mean that I'm broken, that they don't mean that I'm less than. It's all part of my strength. And that's why I'm so passionate about what I do now, because I've been in that place where I felt utterly lost and just broken and worthless. And the shame that you feel when you're in that space is debilitating. And when I stepped forward a few years ago and started telling my story and started talking about my experience and sharing, what I found was it gave others permission to do the same. And when you have that shame and when you have that guilt, you feel like there's nobody else who's going through what you're going through, and you isolate. Shame lives in the dark. And when you can step forward and be open and find somebody who will give you that space to come in and be vulnerable and share, the way we step out of the shadows is by stepping into the light.
So there's another story that, if you don't mind sharing with the listening audience or the viewing audience, and that is, I mean, the reason why I want you to share this part of this next story is because people think that they're going through hell and they don't know how to get out. And we, Dr. Terry and I, we've interviewed people that have been in hell and pull themselves out. And there's so many different ways to get a true appreciation of where you've been. Could you share what happened years after your husband passed and the boyfriend story?
Yeah. So like I said, Andrew passed in 2013, and a few years went by, and I had an amazing group of friends. We did a lot of stuff together, and he started off being one of my most dear friends in the world. And then, we started dating, and he was another one. He was just very much like, one of the best things about him was he just gave me the space to be me. He was just so cool in that way. And we were supposed to get together one night, and I was really tired. I'd actually been at an event for the Humane Society that night. And so I talked to him and I told him, you know, I was going to go ahead and go home. So he was doing some stuff with some friends of his, and he went home. And when I reached out to him the next morning, he wasn't responding to me, which was really unusual. And then one of our dear friends called me and asked me if I was home. He was, and I said, yeah, I'm home. And he's like, all right, we're on our way over there. And I was like, all right, that was weird, 'cause this is like 9 o'clock in the morning. So they got here, and what they told me, I already knew. I think a lot of times our intuition gives us hits when things are going on. But to make a long story short, they got here to tell me that Steve had been killed in a motorcycle accident the night before. He was driving home. He took an exit, actually Glades Parkway in Boca, lost control, went off, the bike flipped, and he was killed instantly. And to say that it was, I talk about how my world came out from under me when I lost Andrew. I became unhinged after Steve passed, and I didn't really realize it. I mean, I just kind of started drinking a lot. That was how I numbed. I wasn't on my phone. I was pretty much just drunk all the time. And that was, again, that was kind of, I look at it now and I'm like, I believe the universe, when we need to do things, you know, our intuition speaks to us. And when we're supposed to do things, we get like those little quiet little voices. And when we ignore them, they get louder and louder and louder. And sometimes the universe, when she's trying to get your attention about something, if it's necessary, she'll kick you in the gut. And then she'll knock you down. And that's what happened with me when I lost Steve in 2016, was I realized that I couldn't continue the way that I was continuing. And I needed to get a grip. And I quit drinking about 10 months after that. Actually, January 1st, 2017 is my sober date.
Mm. Ooh, thank you for sharing. And I apologize for putting you in that moment, that tearful moment. But I think it's very important because it's an extraordinary, it's a stretch of your perspective.
Yes.
On things that have happened to you and how you have become someone that could help others in a massive way, you know? And anyway, so I'm going to change the energy now.
Okay.
I'm going to change the energy. I want us all to take a deep breath in through our nose, out through our mouth, because we are going to start the rapid fire questions.
Oh my God. Okay.
We have five questions for you. And, you know, like I preface this all the time. They're supposed to be answered quick, but we end up getting hung up on something cool that might be said. So.
And Spence, you know me well enough to know I don't answer anything quick.
Yeah. Neither does my partner. Neither does Spencer.
I know. Exactly. That's why there's so much irony around you asking rapid fire questions.
Right?
Terry, maybe we should change the title to something else.
Nope.
I have five very lengthy questions. Oh my God, I have five slow motion questions. All right, here we go. Question number one. Beyond making Prosecco disappear, what are your other superpowers?
My superpower is self-love and self-leadership and connecting. Actually, I think connecting. I believe that I have a gift that lets me know what people need and a desire to show up and help them find that.
Oh, great. Wow. Question number two. How about that, Terry? That was pretty quick, man. We're already on question number two. It took 60 seconds. All right. Funniest flaw that all women have. Same question goes for men. What do you think?
We don't believe in ourselves. We don't see ourselves. Mm. We never see ourselves the way the rest of the world sees ourselves. And I, a lot of times in a first session working with somebody, I will ask them to make a list of the 10 things that they love about themselves. You would not believe the pushback I get on that. And my response is always the same. If you can't come up with 10 things that you love about yourself, ask people in your inner circle, ask your family, ask your friends, and they will reflect things back to you. But I think our biggest flaw as humans, because men and women both do it, is that we do not value our unique gifts in this world.
That's great. I think I shared on a previous program, the Dove commercial, that they asked the woman to, you know, describe herself, and the artist is there drawing the woman, and they're separated by a curtain. And then they ask like four of the women's good friends to come in. And again, they're separated by a curtain, the artist asks, and he's one of the FBI, you know, artists that draw the criminal. And they, they ask the friends described the same woman, and they showed all the images, and the woman that described herself looked terrible, and the ones that the other women, her good friends described, were absolutely, you know, charming and beautiful. And it's just fascinating how one would describe themselves.
Yeah.
Spencer's answer was longer than yours.
It was. And, you know, that leads into, but that's exactly what I'm talking about. And we, you know, especially social media, that's one of, if for no other reason to get off your phone makes you feel bad about yourself.
Yeah.
Stop. Yeah. We have to stop comparing ourselves to others and just own who we are.
Agreed.
Question number three, your favorite quote. You've shared a few of them over the years with me.
Yeah, it has to be right now in the state where I'm at in my life right now. It has to be the quote that I mentioned earlier from Viktor Frankl, because there has been such a big shift for me in the last few years about accepting that responsibility that I am the architect of my life and I get to decide. Nobody else gets to decide for me. I get to choose and I get to decide. And that accepting responsibility, and that was accepting responsibility for my healing and all the parts that go along with that. It's about accepting responsibility when I have to ask for help, and then not only asking for help, but then learning how to receive help was a huge challenge for me. But knowing that I get to decide when things happen, I get to decide what they mean to me, and I get to decide how I want to react to it. And right now that's a primary focus. So that's one of my favorite quotes right now.
Question number four. We all have dogs, and mine is getting mad at the door right now. Sorry if you heard it, overheard it. Question number four, what was the hardest move of that fitness for 50 benchmark, those 11 tests? You did a lot of the easy ones. Do you recall which one was the hardest or would have been the hardest for you?
At that point, it was probably the squats, just because I was still coming back from some of my lower back issues. I still, and I have yet to try this, but I would still challenge you on the numbers on the burpees, because if you can accomplish that, you are subhuman.
Right.
A full, I think it was like a full burpee per second or some craziness like that.
Yeah. That's crazy.
50 in 50 seconds. Yeah. Although I will say, when I was reviewing these in the very beginning, and there was one, that sit to rise test, all you had to do was one without hands, where you would cross your legs, you know, in Indian style, or drop down and then come up. That sit to rise test was like, I actually was able to do it, but I don't know if the audience got to see a video of Dr. Terry doing it. He looked like he had cerebral palsy and he lost a limb. He looked like he had brain trauma. I mean, you name it, whatever it was, he looked like a fish out of water. I don't know if you saw that.
I think that's hard. I mean, I'm able to do it, but I think a lot of it has to do with your flexibility. And, you know, that's going to be different for different people.
Thank you, Suzette. You know. Yeah, I thought it was quite graceful. Yeah, I was ready for the ballet.
Right. So, listen, Dr. Spencer, are we being a little judgy there? Are we being a little judgy?
All right. Well, I will.
That would backfire.
I will tell you. Yeah, it definitely backfired on me. I will tell you that I'm coming out with the next set of 11, but I mean, it's me doing them, and I start out really good. I'm not going to tell you what happens on the 10th and 11th, because it's a very sad sight, but we'll talk about that another time. All right, question number five. If you could tell your 10-year-old self one thing, what would it be?
That everything's going to be okay.
That's good. That's cool. Wow. Yeah,
that everything's going to be okay.
That was good.
All right, I'm going to switch gears a little bit. We just went through, I'm not even going to call it a holiday, but we just went through a day called Memorial Day. And by the time the show comes out, it'll be a couple weeks past. And I was in a very emotional event down in Dallas called Carry the Load. And I'm going to plug that a little bit. People need to hear it, need to check that site out. But anyway, and I was instructed by a Navy SEAL that Memorial Day, you never, ever say thank you for your service to anybody. And that day is reserved for Veterans Day. Memorial Day is only for remembering to honor those who gave the ultimate sacrifice. And it's a memory day. It's not a thank you for your service day. And all the servicemen that I met would always say, we'll politely tell even our loved ones, please don't ever say thank you for your service on this day. So with being said, you have a special connection to one of my favorite places on the planet, and that's Arlington National Cemetery. And so I would like you to honor as close as we are to Memorial Day, the reason you have that special place, and can you tell the audience a little bit about that place for you?
So Arlington National Cemetery, both of my grandparents are buried there. As I mentioned, my grandfather was a Marine. He was actually, they called them Mustangs. So he went in as enlisted, and ultimately when he retired, he was a Lieutenant Colonel. He fought in Vietnam, he fought in World War II, and he fought in the Korean conflict. And he actually lied about his age when he was 17 years old so that he could enlist and go fight for this country. And my grandfather flew a flag out in front of his home as long as I can remember. They had a house in Virginia. They had a house in Colorado. There was always a flag flying. It didn't matter if it was Memorial Day, 4th of July, whatever. There was always a flag because that's just who he was and what he believed in. And he had several medals, and I don't know the stories behind all of them, but he had a couple of Purple Hearts. So he was buried at Arlington National Cemetery with full honors. And I can tell you, and I won't tell you how many years I've been on the planet, but I've been here for a while. And that was the single most impactful, powerful day of my entire life. And I will never forget walking out of the chapel and looking out. And there were probably 100 Marines in dress blacks there to honor my grandfather. And then them loading his casket on the horse-drawn caisson, and then going to the site where he was buried, and the beauty and the respect and the power of what that meant, and to see his sacrifice and what he had done being honored in such a beautiful way, and knowing how many other families had been through that. And then the first time we went back to visit him after he was buried, the headstone next to his, the guy was 22 years old. And every time I go to Arlington National Cemetery and I look out, if you've never been there, the rows are the precision. I mean, the way that everything is put together, and it's just the energy there is so powerful. But when you look out and you see that and you really take in what that means. And I was very blessed. My grandfather fought three wars, but he came home from all three of them. And I recognize that not all families have that, and how fortunate we were that he did, because he was actually shot and thrown into a pit in Okinawa and left for dead. But he wasn't. And that's a whole other story. But the reason Arlington National Cemetery holds so much power for me is not just seeing what my grandfather went through, but just understanding that sacrifice. And that, you know, every year, like the Army Navy game is one of my favorite football games of the year. And I forget exactly how they put it, but it's basically like the Army Navy game is when everybody on the field would sacrifice their life for the people in the stands. And there's just, I don't know, I can't even put words to what the power is. But I'll share something really quick, because I'm sure we're coming up on time. But when my grandmother passed away a little over a year ago, she was 99 years old. And my grandmother was a Navy nurse. And that's actually how my grandparents met. My grandfather was shot and he was in the hospital, and my grandmother was his nurse. And that's how they ended up being together. But, and this was interesting, I didn't know this until we were going through her paperwork, but back in 1946, I guess, when they met, and my grandmother was a Navy nurse and my grandfather was a Marine, when they got married, my grandmother had to leave the Navy. She couldn't be in the Navy and be married. So she left the Navy in 1946. And the reason that was so like sort of front center is that was before a change in the paperwork. So we were trying to find her paperwork, because she was entitled, she was buried with my grandfather at Arlington National Cemetery But aside from being buried as his spouse and buried with him, she had earned her own right to be buried at Arlington because of her service. And we couldn't find the paperwork for that. And it was funny because the woman at the funeral home said something. She's like, well, you know, if you can't find it, like, she can still be there. And my cousin was like, no. Like, she gets to be buried here under her service. And we're going to find that. And we're going to make sure that that happens. But it was just really powerful. But I thought that was funny that back in, or not funny, but ironic that back in 1946, she had to leave the Navy because she got married.
That's interesting.
Incredible. Thank you for that. Thank you.
Yeah. Whew. Thank you for that story. Suzette, we're going to wrap up, but I want to allow you to have the floor for a moment and be able to really share in this crazy mixed up world what your message to all women and the men that love them is. What would that be?
Let's see. That's a really great question. I think I would want to send out a reminder to everybody to listen with compassion, to do our best to put judgment away, especially when it comes to looking at ourselves, and acknowledging that we need to get back to this space where we recognize that we're more similar than we are different. And when we recognize and we see ourselves in other people, it builds connection and not division. And there's so many things in this world right now that seem to want to divide us from each other. And now is not the time for division. As human beings, we are hardwired to live in groups and to be connected to each other. It's how we survive. It's primal. And we're just being driven away, and we're being told to focus on the things about us that are different. And I would just say, approach your life, like I said, just more willing to listen, more willing to come from a space of compassion. You know, if somebody says or does something that upsets you or offends you, or like, you know, ask yourself, could this be something else? Is there another way to look at this? Is there a different meaning that I can give this? And, you know, cut people a break, like just have compassion. We've all been through stuff. We're all going through stuff. And we never know what another human being is going through in any given moment. So just have empathy and compassion and love for our fellow humans, because we're all here just doing the best that we can. And circle back real quick to one of my other favorite quotes is Ram Dass. We're all just walking each other home.
Oh, I like that one.
And we will end on that. That was fantastic. Boy, you got me a little emotional a couple times here during this conversation. So thank you, Suzette. I appreciate all your insight.
Thank you so much for having me and for allowing me to be a voice on your podcast. I'm not going to lie. I went back and looked at some of your previous guests and I was a little intimidated. So I really want to acknowledge both of you for the work and the voices that you are bringing out to the community and to the world. It's so powerful and beautiful. And I want to acknowledge both of you for doing that.
Thank you for that.
Thanks, Suzette. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Kraken Backs podcast. We hope you enjoyed, and make sure you follow our Instagram at Kraken Backs podcast. Catch new episodes every Monday. See you next time.